Well, now we are moving on to the issue of direct provision. And earlier in the week, we heard from Minister Éan O'Riordan after a report by Brian O'Connell on two accommodation centres for asylum seekers. Brian has been doing a series of reports on the direct provision system for us, and he joins me now from our Cork studio. Brian, you've been speaking there with a solicitor who is taking on cases that very few others have been willing to touch. Before we go into the details, remind listeners, what exactly is direct provision and what are the problems that have been highlighted with it?
Well, good morning, Keelan. It's basically a system whereby asylum seekers are given food accommodation and medical attention if they need it, plus an allowance of €19.10 a week and a smaller allowance for their offspring. And this is while they await a decision on their asylum. So it's been in existence in Ireland about 14 years. It was meant to be a temporary solution, but as we know, some people are living in these 34 centres for a period of 10, 12, 13 years in some cases. I've been meeting with asylum seekers in recent months. Many of them were talking about their experiences with the legal system, Keelan. And often, in Cork especially, they mentioned to me one solicitor who they said went the extra mile for them. I'm sure lots of solicitors will take cases on pro bono, but Sean Mulvihill, I learned, he will take cases to the High Court for asylum seekers. And often he doesn't get paid for that work, obviously, if he loses the case. Now, he's been a solicitor in Cork for the past 14 years, dealing mostly with immigration and asylum issues.
Some people have been here seven, some people have been here eight, some people have been nine, and we have actually one person who is 14 years now living in this country. There should be just one appeal system for everybody. But at the moment, you could be waiting. First of all, if you go for your interview, and you might get refugee status at your interview, but if you don't, like 99% of the people don't presently, well, it might be changed a small bit now, then you go to the Refugee Appeals Tribunal. That then could take another 6 months or 9 months before you get a decision. One person presently who's waiting 2 years, we still have no decision made, even though that person went to the High Court, challenged it, and they went back to the Refugee Appeals Tribunal, and since then we still have no decision on their case. Now they're here at least now 9 years.
In your experience, Sean, what percentage of the cases are genuine?
Genuine, I suppose there would be. They're all different. I'd say about 60 to 70% would be genuine. I think direct provision is a disaster. Well, it wouldn't be a disaster if they were only here 1 or 2 years, but now they're here 9, 10, 11 years, and it's causing unbelievable stress. I have people here who came in about a year ago, put in their appeals about a year ago, and they haven't been called yet.
You see firsthand the impact this system has on people, on their lives. It must be heartbreaking.
It is, yeah, to see them coming in happy. Well, not happy, but they'll be a lot more confident and self-assured when they come in. And when you see them after 7 more years or 8 years, they'll be, you know, everything, they're gone cynical, they don't believe anything now, anything that anybody says. I'd say lots of them are very suicidal presently. They don't want to go return back to their country. They're determined to stay here because whatever life they have here must be better than the life that they have back home. So that tells you how sincere they are.
What are the priorities? What are the things you change immediately?
The priorities is immediately deal with all the people who are here over 5 years in a humane manner. Some of their children are going to school here for the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. To deal with all those people immediately, get the one appeal strategy working immediately so that people won't be waiting in limbo for the next 9 years as they are presently. If those two things are done, it'll be sorted out within 2 to 3 years.
Brian, I mean, a lot of detail on the delays in the system now. I mean, obviously the numbers of people seeking asylum has reduced over the last number of years. Yeah. Is it any quicker at present?
Well, Sean was telling me he's now only getting a listing for 2010 cases in the High Court. So that would suggest as they're about 4 years behind. I think there are new people being appointed to the Refugee Appeals Tribunal. But it doesn't sound any quicker. And I think the problem is, Keelan, when you go into this system, you get your initial hearing, then you have you can appeal it. And it takes years for these appeals to come through. Whereas if there was one singular process, at least it would be dealt with maybe in a 1 to 2 year period.
Brian, can I just, I mean, is there a danger if you make the process too easy that you increase the number of people who come to Ireland to seek asylum? Because, I mean, you'd have to guess that that was part of the reason it was made such a complicated process in the first place, was to act as a deterrent.
I guess so. I guess there's obviously a balance to be gotten here between not having too much of a pull factor and in terms of securing our borders. But I think at the moment that balance is way out of kilter. And I think they can put a system in place which does get that balance right. But they absolutely have to deal with these humanitarian cases of people who are here, especially 5 years and more. Mm. I mean, the government have indicated there will be this new singular process, but we wait to see. I mean, the second issue as well that we heard in previous reports I've done, Keelan, is the issue of mental health. And it's a really big issue. And people who are in the system a long time seem to be especially despairing. Earlier this month, I thought was very interesting was when Ireland appeared before the UN Human Rights Committee, which looked at the state's obligations under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. And this is an international treaty which Ireland has signed up to. But one government department official gave this response in relation to a question about mental health and direct provision in Ireland.
The other points which were raised by Mr. Iwasawa dealt with the issue of mental health and health generally. I just want to say that all asylum seekers in the direct provision system are entitled to the exact same health services as an Irish citizen, and that includes mental health services. There has been references in the past to the state of mental health in relation to residents in centres, but in fact there's very little verifiable data out there in relation to that particular circumstance. And the point I'm making here is that they have the exact same entitlements as Irish citizens.
Okay, now Brian, you saw a case file relating to one individual in particular. That case was very disturbing. Can you tell me about it?
Well, this particular case is, as you said, very disturbing. And whether or not this person's underlying mental health issues were created or caused by direct provision, obviously, is very hard to say. But what is clear from the case files that I've seen is that they're certainly not being helped by the delay in their case being processed. They're in the system a number of years. Now, this person has one child, and the parent's mental health suffered so much that she thought her child was a witch and she poured boiling water over them. So really disturbing incident. Since she was refused asylum initially, there has been a significant deterioration in her condition. And also we know the UN committee stated that prolonged accommodation in direct provision centres is not conducive to family life. Now, this parent is presently being given access to a range of supports. They're stable and a team is helping them deal with their issues and also to support them as a parent. But the issue here, Keelan, is that they're still under threat of deportation back to a country, their home country, which doesn't even recognise her underlying mental illness. They wouldn't have any supports there. So the big issue is not only for her, but also her child. Without these supports that they're getting currently, the child would be in danger. So I suppose the humanitarian aspect of this case is being overlooked. And unless appeal is successful, they could be deported. And this is a real mental health issue being exasperated by the length of time they're in the direct provision system, as the medical notes that I've seen would show.
Yeah, and as you say, you don't know whether it's been caused by it, but either way, it has not been helped by it. Will that be taken into account in any humanitarian appeal, the mental health of the mother and indeed the impact on the child?
Well, this is it. It seems so arbitrary a system at the moment that solicitors that I would have been talking say, we just don't know. It depends on the judge you get. It depends on who's reviewing the case. It depends on how the appeal goes. And then in some cases that we've been hearing from where people are successful in the High Court, it's taking another 6, 7, 8, 9 months for their papers to come through or for them to go back before the tribunal, sometimes before the very same members who rejected their case in the first place. So it seems a really convoluted system at the moment. And again, you know, the government might say that there's new systems in place now, but I've been meeting asylum seekers who arrived into Ireland 6, 7, 8 months ago, and they still haven't had their first interview.
Really. Now, you met a single mother with three children. Tell me about this case in particular.
Yeah, I met several cases, but this single mom has three children, all of whom were born in Ireland. And the other person I met is one of the longest waiting for a resolution to her application in Cork. Now, this person came here with her daughter because there was a threat of female genital mutilation in her home of Nigeria. We'll hear first from her daughter and then from her mom.
What age are you?
I'm 11 years old.
And tell me where you live.
I live in a centre and I have a few friends, but it's kind of boring because it's the same thing over, and it's not fair because we don't get to bring our friends, or we just have to stay there, and it's not fair for me and my friends.
And do you understand why the system, why it takes so long for your case to be processed?
I don't. It's hard, yeah.
And you'd like to stay in Ireland?
Yeah, I'd like to stay in Ireland without my friends.
You probably have loads of friends, have you?
Yeah, I have a lot of friends.
I came in 2005, January.
And what were the reasons why you left home?
I left home because of circumcision for my daughter, and because my husband's family doesn't allow circumcision for a daughter, so my family, my own parents, wanted it.
And you're living in one of the centres, we won't say where.
Yeah.
What's it like?
It's not easy at all. It's not... The government tries, but it's not good for the kids because all their life is being spent in that. We are stagnant. The asylum system is bad, especially for kids. It's not good for them. Mentally, it's not.
A lot of people are talking to me about mental health issues.
Yeah. Mentally is bad. It's very bad. I don't know how to explain it, but it's not good for the soul, for the body, for the spirit. It's not at all.
Gosh, life is hard. It's very sad hearing that girl talking about having to leave her friends. Tell us now, the last family you met, Brian, they were waiting almost 9 years to get some kind of answer. They talked to you about how the environment in the centre causes problems for their children whilst in school.
Yeah, well, the mum I met, she had three children, all of them born in Ireland, all of them living in one room in a centre for 9 years. She feels, I was asking her, how are the kids getting on in school? And she was saying, well, her eldest son is very bright. The biggest problem, she said, is trying to get him to concentrate in school because of the home environment that they're in. There's lots of noise in the corridors. It's really hard to get them a quiet space to do their homework and study. So you can just see on that basic level, it's having an impact on the kids. One of the most heartbreaking things for her, she was telling me last year, was that she couldn't allow her son go on a school tour because she didn't have the money to pay for it. He's in four class. And I mean, try explaining that to a kid in four class when everybody else in his class is going.
Yeah, I suppose, Brian, some people would say, well, look, it's not just asylum seekers who can't afford to send their children on school trips. I mean, it's interesting the reaction we've been getting to your reports, some very negative comments. But others have come through to actually help the people you've been speaking to.
Yeah, I think always when you do reports like this, Keelan, you get the cross spectrum of reactions. You get very negative anti-immigration comments. But then a number of listeners did get in touch on Monday after the show to offer to pay for football registration for some of the young boys we heard on the show. So I think it's proper that we would acknowledge that kindness.
Okay, well, listen, Brian, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning with that.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.